From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. The Supreme Court wrapped up its term with a bang today, issuing two major decisions. And in one, they declared that Hobby Lobby, the national arts and craft store chain, cannot be required to provide emergency contraception services to employees under the Obamacare law. And that's because of the owner's religious beliefs. White House spokesperson Josh Earnest was asked about the fallout from the ruling.
In terms of the political fallout, I'll let the political analysts out there make that decision. The president does, however, believe that there's a very important principle at stake, which is the president believes that women should have the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care coverage, and that interference by their boss, for whatever reason, based on their religious views or just their scientific opinion, is inappropriate.
The White House spokesperson speaking today on that Hobby Lobby case, and we'll get to that in a few minutes, but there was another decision today as well in which the court ruled that some public employees cannot be forced to pay union dues. Here to talk to us about both cases is NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. Ron, let's start with the union case. Home health care worker Pamela Harris sued the Illinois Governor Pat Quinn, saying that these dues that she had to pay violated her First Amendment rights. Give us some background on the case and tell us what Pamela Harris's argument was.
Pamela Harris is not what you would call a conventional state employee. She is a mother whose son, Josh, has a rare genetic syndrome and needs to be cared for at home. Now, he could be institutionalized under Medicaid and have his care paid for and have his care delivered by regular state employees. But the state of Illinois and some others have chosen to strike another arrangement for reasons that should be pretty obvious. If he's better off at home getting care from his mother, pay the benefits to his mother and have her deliver the care. And that's what was done and what has been done elsewhere. There are some 20,000 of these personal assistants in Illinois alone. So the benefits were coming directly to her, and part of the arrangement by which the state set all this up involved her being represented by the Service Employees International Union, which was representing some of the other people who were providing Medicaid services. And they negotiate her wages with the state, and the state determines how much she'll be paid and what her benefits are and so forth. So she is what the court referred to today as a partial state employee, although there are also laws in which this same arrangement is referred to as being a joint state employee. So we're dealing with some nomenclature differences here, but essentially she is someone who's providing services that the state would normally do under a much more personal sort of arrangement.
Well, and that's what often happens in these cases, is it comes down to a definition of in this case, a partial public employee. So what does this mean for unions in general? How broad is this ruling?
For people who don't fall in that sort of gray area of partial or joint employee status, it really shouldn't mean anything immediately. And a lot of people thought, well, this is an opportunity for a court which has been seen as somewhat hostile to public employee unions to really go after them and say that they can't compel people who don't want to be in the union to be in the union and pay dues. Maybe they can work something else out, or people can be part of the union and benefit from it without actually having to pay the dues if they object to that. Well, there was a case back in the 1970s where the court referred to that as freeloading, essentially an employee getting all the benefits of what the union negotiates without ponying up any part of the cost. And the court disapproved of that freeloading back then. The court decision was called the Abood decision. And today it had seemed that Justice Alito was inviting more challenges to the Abood decision, but he did not go ahead and invalidate it or overturn it.
Okay, let's move on to the other case decided today, the Hobby Lobby case. Talk about, first of all, what the argument was that Hobby Lobby was making.
Hobby Lobby is owned by the Green family, and the Green family pretty much owns all of it. And they make all the policies, and it's an unusual company. They don't operate on Sunday. They play religious music in the office. They encourage their employees' religious impulses. And they objected to one particular part of Obamacare's mandate. They wanted to provide health insurance for their employees. They've always done that. But they didn't want it to include contraception coverage that included certain kinds of contraception that would involve an IUD or a planned B, morning after pill, or things that they consider to be abortifacients. And as a result, they did not feel that they should be compelled to participate in this, and they sued under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and the court has upheld their suit.
And again, this comes down to, in this case, what a closely held corporation is. They're calling Hobby Lobby a closely held corporation, meaning it's not a big public company. It's a private company with just a handful of owners.
Yes, that is correct. And it doesn't matter how many employees they have. They have 16,000 employees, and there are some other closely held corporations that have very large employment and very large footprints in the economy. But they are only owned by a very, very small number of people, and it is presumed by the court that that small group of people could all share a very distinct religious right, which would be trampled if they had to provide contraception services to all those employees.
And will this case have larger implications for women who are looking for access to certain kinds of contraception in all kinds of workplaces?
It could, of course, and it will be introduced into many arguments. But it is possible that the administration can extend an accommodation it's already made for certain church-related institutions like universities. And if it does so, that would seem to cure this without forcing the corporation to violate what it sees as its religious rights.
NPR senior Washington editor and correspondent Ron Elving. Ron, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeremy.